Morning. The next case on the court's calendar is Keith Hagan versus Woodmere Township. We're ready for arguments. Would counsel for appellant please approach the podium, introduce yourself for the record, and you may begin.
Your Honor, thank you. May it please the court, counsel, my name is John Stephen Hagan, and I'm appearing on behalf of the appellants this morning. There are two principal issues presented by this appeal. Issue one, whether respondent can accomplish, through one statute, the same result that is expressly prohibited by another. Issue two, whether respondent can negligently create a nuisance, then require the two private property owners shoulder the risk of liability into an indeterminate future. We seek reversal of the district court's grant of summary judgment in both regards. We also seek direction that the district court enter judgment in favor of appellants. Issue number one, the issue of one statute negating another. Resolution of this issue requires fulfilling the legislative imperative of harmonizing statutes rather than treating them as antagonistic or mutually negating. That's what happened in this case. Now, one point of agreement between the parties is that vacating a road and abandoning a road lead to precisely the same result. That was the concession, necessarily, of counsel's colleague when he wrote in February 2016 that both reached the same end result. The district court, too, observed the confluence, the similarity between abandonment and vacation in conclusion of law number 10, where the court itself said, what happened here may appear to be vacating the road, but the court is not convinced. Hence, the legislative interpretation and harmonizing of the statutes at play in this issue starts with a baseline premise that vacating and abandoning a road are complementary. Hence, the statutes that govern both must be harmonized. Now, the township treats the concepts of abandonment and vacation as though they are mutually exclusive. The Minnesota Supreme Court has held otherwise. In fact, the Minnesota Supreme Court even uses the terms interchangeably in some cases. In Neal versus Hake, 93, Northwest 2nd, at 829, the Minnesota Supreme Court concluded that abandonment had not been established and that, quote, here the city has not vacated the alley, unquote. So too, the holding in Reed's Landing Campers Association, 546 Northwest 2nd at 14, and I quote, we have always been reluctant to grant such vacation without something more than non-use. Mere implied abandonment is not enough. So this issue starts with the baseline premise that there is not a rigid distinction between the two, that they are complementary. In fact, the fact set in this case is diametrically opposite in terms of abandonment from all the other cases cited by the parties before the district court. In a prototypical abandonment case, a putative property owner, a budding property owner, will allege non-use of a city easement on the back of his or her property and allege that it had been abandoned. It is a defensive use of the city of abandonment. That's not the case here. In this case, the township is using it as an offensive vehicle to deprive my clients of their property rights. Now, with respect to abandonment, before I move on to the issue of the statutes that interplay here, two points must be made. Number one, the township's chair himself declared in the 1990s, the township is not declaring the road abandoned. Only a court can do that. That's true. Abandonment requires a determination by a court, which did not happen. It happened on summary judgment, even though they had not pled a claim for abandonment. That, too, is error. So the statute itself, the township relies fully, completely, on Minnesota Statute 365.10, Subdivision 11. However, that statute is not a one-of-a-kind exception to the requirement that there be a judicial determination of abandonment.
Counsel, I understand that's your position, but that isn't what the statute says, is it? I mean, it references the ability of electors and let the town board by resolution go forward after the 25 years, doesn't mention judicial termination.
I would say that the statute supports appellant's position in this case. And I'll address the statute, the specific terms, line by line, because it is important to give context to it. And that context starts with the holding of the Minnesota Supreme Court in Halverson versus City of Newport, in which the court held that the concept of abandonment is a protection to a municipality, a protection. Therefore, if we look at the terms of the statute itself, Subdivision 11, abandoned town roads, the heading, stated in the past tense, that required that the road already be determined to have been abandoned. First sentence, the electors may let the town board by resolution determine. May let is again in the past tense, and what that means necessarily is that at that time, the town board did not have that discretion. There's been no allegation from respondent in this case that up to March 2015, it didn't have the ability or the jurisdiction to maintain a roadway within its jurisdiction.
Counsel, do you agree with your opponent's distinction between common law abandonment and statutory abandonment?
I'm sorry?
Do you agree with his distinction as he listened in his brief between common law abandonment and statutory abandonment?
We do not agree with that, respectfully, for the following reasons. Both common law and the statute address abandonment, but one must be read in conjunction with the other. We read this to mean the terms. You're talking about an abandonment that has already occurred. We do believe that a judicial determination of abandonment is a prerequisite. So put it in context of this statute and the holding of the Minnesota Supreme Court in Halverson. What this statute means is that if a road has been determined to be abandoned, that added protection is that the electors can vote to allow the township to reopen it. Reopen, to open or maintain town road.
Yeah. Isn't one argument, though, that if it's less than 25 years, the township could go forward for a common law judicial determination and after 25 years can rely on the statutory abandonment?
We don't agree with that interpretation. We think that this means that there has been a past judicial determination of common law abandonment. If the statute meant what the township alleges, it would have said simply, every town road that has not been maintained for 25 years is deemed abandoned. It doesn't say that. And the words of the legislature make a difference. And the words of the legislature in this case talk in the past tense in terms of abandonment, about letting the town board do something, about opening a road, which presumes that it is closed in the first instance. Two, what's textually interesting, we'd say dispositive, is that 365.10 carves out one exception. It carves out an exception for impassable road complaints under Minnesota Statute 163.16. Under a cardinal tenet of statutory construction, the enumeration of one exception negates all others. So apply it to this case. When the statute says, for purposes of this subdivision, Section 163.16 does not apply to town roads described in this subdivision. Here, what they're saying conversely is that Minnesota Statute 160.09, Subdivision 3, does not apply to roads subject to 365.10. That's a textual distinction that the district court did not make. And that dovetails with the function of the district court and with this court on appeal to harmonize and give credence, give effect to the terms of both statutes. Now, it is undisputed in this case that every of the three predicate factors of 160.09 has been met. First, the property is more than 5 acres. That is undisputed. Second, Wetherill Road is the only means of access to the property. Now, the district court made a fact finding that County Road 46 provides access. It is unclear to appellants where that citation came in the record. It is certainly not an allegation that even respondent made before the district court.
Is County 46 evident on the photograph you included in your brief? Is that visible in this photograph on page 4?
I'm sorry, again, Your Honor?
Is County 46 visible on this particular photograph on page 4 of your brief?
I don't believe it is. And the evidence before the district court is that my client cannot access the property unless they do things such as drive a tractor up a river, navigate through a bog only when it freezes in the winter, or balance themselves across two telephone poles that now span the Willow River. So there is no finding, no evidence in the record to support the proposition that County Road 46 provides access to the property. In fact, even on appeal, the township cites the district court's holding, but simply cites the holding itself rather than point to any actual evidence in that regard. So that's factor two that has been met. Factor three, the appellants have not given permission to vacate the road. That road provides the sole and only access to their property. And these are not developers. These are not well-heeled people who want to subdivide and develop and sell. These are two private property owners who simply want to enjoy their property.
But they've never had access. I mean, they purchased their property long after this bridge was in the state of disrepair and the road was really impassable.
In part, certainly, but in part also not, because despite repeated requests over years, the township has failed to act upon any request from the DNR, from my clients to repair, refurbish, simply maintain the property. So in part, Your Honor, correct. But
when you say in part, I don't know. I mean, wasn't my statement accurate? I mean, they bought their property well beyond this period of 25 years. So when have they had this access that they're seeking?
If you mean they bought it sooner than 20 or more recently than 25 years ago, that's correct.
I do absolutely mean that, correct. Yes.
So it's correct that they bought the property in reliance upon the fact that there was a recorded road. It is true as well that the road was in disrepair over the years, and despite multiple requests, is what I'm saying, the road had deteriorated now to the point that the bridge has fallen into the river. So it is not a situation where my clients looked at this and said, okay, we understand we have no right to roadway access. Quite to the contrary, they looked at this, saw a recorded road, made attempts to have the township fulfill a basic obligation to maintain the roads, and were unsuccessful in that regard. So I'd conclude my initial presentation by saying this. The statutes can be harmonized. This is not a Herculean task. It's not a Gordian knot. They can be harmonized, and they can be harmonized thusly by saying that, yes, even if their interpretation of 365.10 is correct, they cannot abandon a road if doing so would lead to the precise result that is prohibited by Minnesota Statute 160.09, Subdivision 3. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Stefanhagen is quite a bit taller than I am. May it please the panel, counsel. My name is Scott Witte. I come from Duluth, and I appear here on behalf of the respondent, Windermere Township. I think the most important thing I can tell the court about this case is what it does not involve, and that is a vacated road. Appellant's entire case, both at the district court level and the appeal, but for perhaps the nuisance allegation, hinges on the contention that the road at issue was vacated by the town. But the legislature has defined what the term vacate involves, and that did not occur here. In the absence of a road vacation, Minnesota Statute 160.09 Subdivision 3 simply does not apply. The second most important thing I can tell you about this case is that the facts provide an opportunity to highlight the intricate framework that the legislature has created for town roads. The somewhat, I would say, impressive scheme that exists in the statutes includes the rights and protections for town boards, aggrieved individuals, landowners, and other taxpaying residents in the town in various scenarios. The example here, we have a road that has not been maintained for now closer to 50 years than 25. It includes a need to reference a couple important provisions in the statutory framework. The first is a process by which a landowner can seek county assistance, I'll call it, county action, to force a town board to maintain a road. But that right is not indefinite. It exists for 25 years under Minnesota Statute 365.10, Subdivision 11. If a road has not been maintained for 25 years or more, only the taxpaying residents of the town can authorize a town board to spend town funds on the maintenance of the road. The county option, an impassable road complaint, is off the table. In the absence of such authorization from town electors, a town board simply cannot, has no legal authority to expend tax-raised monies for maintenance or reconstruction of the road. The third most important thing, and I'll circle back to a couple of these if I have time to do so, but the third most important thing I want to address piggybacks on the second, and that is the importance of the powers preserved for town electors under the Minnesota statutes. The powers of the town electors are provided for the most part in MnStat 365.10. And I will say that this phenomenon is specific. It's unique to Minnesota town governments. I referred to it in the respondent's brief here as the hallmark of town governments in Minnesota. Perhaps that's an overstatement, but it's an important facet nonetheless. The principal reason for my bringing up this third important topic is because granting the appellant's requested relief here, a writ of mandamus, forcing the town to do work, to maintain, to reconstruct, to spend money on this road, would require the court to essentially strip, or at the least, not recognize the vote of the town's electors back in March of 2015 at its annual meeting. This was an exercise of, again, an extremely important and unique and essential part of Minnesota town governance. Specifically, that is the right of the town board to, again, use town money to reconstruct a road that hasn't been worked for or maintained for 25 years. Council has suggested that the terminology in subdivision 11 of that statute requires or permits a town to become authorized by its electors to work on a common law, a road abandoned under the common law abandonment theory. I would suggest that that's impossible. Upon abandonment of a road, a judicial abandonment determination of a road, the town no longer has any legal interest in that road. It cannot expend money. It cannot maintain that road. The rights to that, the property upon which a road right-of-way existed previously, reverts to the fee title owners on either side. The effect of a writ, as requested by appellants in this matter, would also result in two town residents usurping the rights preserved for the town electors as a whole. It would force them to pay for, as a group, more or less an expensive driveway on a roadway that has not been maintained for 25, now 45 years. Now, this is not only inconsistent with the legislature's specific grant of powers to the electors, but it also would represent an improper use, I contend, of the remedy of the writ of mandamus. Appellants' argument today about why 365.10 subdivision 11 does not apply here is unavailing. It controls this case. I'm going to shift gears now back to the appellant's claim that the town violated Minnesota Statute 160.09, Subdivision 3. That statute, as you know, says that a town cannot vacate a road if it renders a property of a certain size landlocked, unless there is consent or other access provided. By its express language, and purposefully, I would submit, this statute applies only to the vacation of a town's interest in a road. Vacating a road is different than the common law abandonment of a road. Appellant would like the court to deem them similar or the same. I agree that the result, the consequence of a judicial determination of common law abandonment and a town's affirmative act of vacating a road by way of the process that it provides, that it has been provided under Minnesota Statute 164.07, is the same. It extinguishes the interests of the town in that road. The legislature, however, has concluded that the means to that end, the means to that consequence, matter. One is an affirmative act by a town board. It can only get to that act if the process is started by way of a petition signed by landowners or approval authorization by the town's electors at a annual or special meeting for that purpose. Typically, that is an authorization that a resolution passed by electors that says the town board may go forth and vacate whatever road is being at issue. The town board then has the right to do so. Now, I mentioned that vacating a road is defined in statute. It's not in a list of defined terms like we see in some statutory sections, but it is defined by the very specific process, a process I just described very briefly, a proper commencement by way of elector authorization or petition, a hearing, public hearing, a decision made by the town board, an award of damages issued by the town board through those proceedings, and then a statutory provided appeal period. There can be no dispute that none of those steps happened here. So the town didn't vacate a road, and Minnesota Statute 160.09, Subdivision 3, which specifically uses the term vacate, does not apply.
Mr. Witte, is there any support in the record for the district court's determination that the appellants have egress and ingress over County Road 46 to their property?
I believe the support for that is the, and pardon me, I'm not sure if it came in by way of an affidavit of the appellants themselves or discovery responses that were provided as part of the record, but that their ability to access the property from County Road 46 through and a logging road to get from A to B, and that was determined by the court, I believe, as access. And
this says, as noted in the 1991 town board meeting, so I don't know if there were minutes available to the district court. Or
if there were meeting minutes from that meeting, they are in the record. Okay. And I apologize if I can't recall a specific statement. I believe that was a statement made by the town board in a at a hearing, or excuse me, a meeting. So I'm not certain whether that came from comments made by the appellants themselves at that meeting or if it was a conclusion drawn.
Okay.
At that time. But Judge Hallbrooks, I will note that your pointing out of the fact that the appellants never had, never owned this property while they used Wetherill Road for access is an apt point. And it comes back to the, I think, the nuisance claim for the most part. But it's important to note that the appellants themselves, that there's no evidence in the record that they ever use this road with a vehicle in the common sense of us using a road. They never drove over this bridge. This bridge and this road have been in a dilapidated, a dilapidated and unmaintained state for decades before they even purchased the property. This is an affirmative request for the town to, in essence, recreate a road that they never knew as a road. Now, appellants attempt to get around the abandoned, when a road is considered abandoned under 365 subdivision 11, that it must have been vacated. Again, the legislature has told us what vacating a road involves. That did not occur here. And another notable and important point here is that, not to be lost through what I consider a fun discussion about town statutes and road vacations and road abandonment, I know others might not share that enjoyment, the statute does carve out remedies for folks that are in the position of the appellants here. First, you'll note in Minnesota Statute 365.10 subdivision 11, it specifically provides that the contents of that statute do not preclude a landowner from seeking a cartway. So a cartway petition is one avenue that the appellants have to get to where they want to be. And the legislature clearly allows that and with some foresight put that right in the statute. The second is, we know that only the electors can authorize a town to maintain a road or spend money to maintain a road after it has not been worked on for 25 years. They have a political avenue. If they seek and lobby sufficient electors to convince them to vote for the maintenance of that road, theoretically, they can get there. I've already, I think, touched on the fact that the appellant's repeated reliance on the canons of construction really don't get home here, and that's because vacate has a specific meaning and a specific process that the legislature has provided. And if it wanted 160.09 subdivision 3 to apply beyond vacating of a road, the legislature certainly has the right to change that, but it doesn't. Briefly, Your Honor, the negligence claim without a duty, and the town doesn't have a duty here because it has no right to spend money to maintain the road, that negligence claim should be continue to be dismissed. And with respect to the nuisance, I would go back to the actual damage, the lack of actual damage to these folks. They purchased property with no road near them, and they have not been, their circumstances have not changed since the purchase, and furthermore, the legislature has given them the right to seek a cartway. I see that my time is now running out. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
When I began, I said that there were two fundamental issues before the court. During my opening presentation, I addressed the first. I'd like to close the loop on that and then devote my remaining time to the second. To close the loop on the first, the township has not cited any case, published or unpublished, for the proposition that Minnesota Statute 365.10, subdivision 11, applies in this case. So there is no case law. What we are left with thus are precepts of statutory construction that govern, that don't allow a municipality to shirk a municipal duty through application of one statute in its mind by disregarding another. To answer Your Honor's question, this too is on point number one. The only citation to County Road 46 was in finding of fact, I think, paragraph 11. That references a 1991 board meeting that was not discussed, nor was it part of the record on summary judgment. And my client specifically dispute that. So there is no, for the purpose of 160.09, access to this property. So turning to point two, this point has drawn less attention, but it is co-equal in importance to my clients. Because as matters stand right now, in Pine County, there is a bridge that was under the township's jurisdiction that has fallen into a river. If this judgment is allowed to stand, my clients own that in a functional, real sense. They own that the ingress and egress, they own the fallen bridge, and they own the liability for that. They own it in the same way that a contractor may have liability for an unsecured job site. They own it in the same respect as a homeowner may have an unfenced pool in a backyard.
Counsel, hadn't that already collapsed by the time they bought the property?
I'd say the record is unclear about when exactly it did collapse. So that there is nothing in the record either way to show when the bridge did collapse. And I think therefore that the district court, made an assumption that it had occurred some time before. But irrespective of that, the salient point, the critical point on point two, is that the negligent acts, the creation of a nuisance, all occurred, even by the township's admission, prior to the March 2015 vote of the electors. So all of the predicate acts upon which my client's claims are based in negligence and nuisance occurred prior to the vote that they say figuratively tied their hands. And that's the key distinction in this case. It is the district court dispatched the negligence and nuisance claims in two sentences in one case and three sentences in the other. But the brevity is not so much notable at the fact that the district court did not recognize that those claims were based on facts that occurred prior to any of the conduct that the township alleges in this case is dispositive. And hence, the fact that even if they were correct regarding Minnesota Statute 365.10, they are not correct that even a judicial determination of abandonment would mean that their neglect for years, their creation of a nuisance for years, before that vote is somehow non-actionable. It is not a judicial eraser that allows them to somehow staff and do away with a long period of neglect. So it's a key point to my clients. They are facing liability for something they didn't create. They want the nuisance abated. It is a simple request by two private landowners who can't afford to do it themselves, who are asking through mandamus or judgment that the township do so because they created the nuisance before this whole supposed abandonment or vacation ever occurred. For those reasons, we're asking that the district court be reversed. We believe that there is a basis, a compelling basis instead, to direct the entry of judgment for my clients as to either or both, frankly, points one and point two. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted. The court is going to take a break until its next case at 12:20. Set up.